97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker. Yeah, you know, I keep searching online about Boeing and trying to find, okay, do I know anyone that's going to be out there? And I've been sending some text messages and things. It's such a big deal. I want to see how this plays out this week, but I wonder how much of a disruption it's actually going to be.
Well, I do.
It's a pretty big deal.
I know some of our listeners are Boeing workers, and they were writing in when we were talking about this last week. So hopefully some of you are listening and can give us some clarity on this, because what's interesting to me is when you hear about the offer of a 20% raise over 4 years, the average person will sit there and say, well, come on, that's a great deal. Why would it, maybe it's not amazing, but it's a pretty good deal. Why would you not be willing to take that? Well, what the workers told us was the really big issue was this controversial work schedule where they were told they had to work, Ethan, was it like 11 or 12 hour days or something like that? And they had to work weekends or certain weekends.
Yeah, it was something like that.
It didn't sound great. And so that was very understandable. Like, hey, that's actually what's stopping us from accepting this offer. Well, my understanding, and again, maybe there's some nuances that I don't know about, but my understanding is that the best and final offer that Boeing presented last week included scrapping that whole work schedule. So if they got the raise they were okay with initially and they got the work schedule scrapped, what's the holdup is my question.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question I think some of the leaders will have to answer for. I'm sure they'll get in front of a camera and be happy to answer that sort of thing. But it sounds like, in the sake of Boeing in defense, if they got rid of the things that were, you know, one of the biggest sticking points and still getting some pretty hefty raises, I'm curious what the sticking point is now. So I guess we'll have to find out. All right. Thank you for that. I'm sure we'll get people that message into the show and give us more insight into it. All right. Let's do the short list.
The Mark Cox short list.
Historically bad nominees deserve historic levels of scrutiny. We have never seen nominees as flawed, as compromised, as unqualified as we have right now. And the Republican senators know that.
I feel like instead of saying nominees, we can just say Democrat politicians. We can substitute that out into what Chuck Schumer is saying, and it would have the same effect. It's, you know, a lot of rhetoric, of course, but all things considered, it's like throwing, all things considered, it is like throwing stones in a glass house.
The Democrats need votes from everybody from never Trump conservative Republicans to disaffected socialists to moderates to progressives to liberals. They're all part of the Democratic coalition if we're going to win with 55-58%.
Keep in mind, if you're a Democrat, your Democratic association now extends to disaffected socialists, according to, who is that again? That was Denver, Colorado, or Democrats in Colorado, Governor Jared Polis mentioned that one. So if you are a Democrat, do you like that your party is saying that you are one and the same with disaffected socialists? I'd be concerned.
My focus has been on the people who have been here. Millions of long-term residents of the United States who happen to be undocumented that have been the target of this administration's increasingly aggressive and cruel arrest, detention, and deportation policies.
It just so happened to be undocumented. Just so happens to be like, oh, you're a victim of circumstance here. Just so happens to be undocumented. And when immigration law is enforced and you're undocumented, an illegal immigrant into this country, oh, just so happens to be on the wrong side of the law. No, you're on the wrong side the whole time. You are just allowed to proceed unlawfully until it's time to pay the piper.
I just can't possibly believe that someone who was attorney general for a good period of time, a United States senator for a good period of time, and then vice president for 4 years, and then ran for president, all of a sudden believes that the best way to solve it is from being outside the system. Oh, please.
That's my favorite quote. Oh, please.
Sounds like Urkel. Please.
Oh, Urkel. Nice. All right, I'm glad that we got an Urkel comment in this morning. That's really good. Oh, Kim, what a morning. Any morning that you get Urkel involved is a good morning.
He's right. Yeah.
Ah, oh, please.
It's ridiculous that she expects us to believe that that's the reason. I mean, come on. We all know that you were once, sadly, surprisingly, leading in the polls for governor of California and to be the presidential nominee in 2028. And over the last number of weeks, it's gone and tanked.
Yeah.
So she would be a fool to continue wanting to keep her name in the hat, you know, throw her name back in. If she's not, it's not looking so hot for her in the polls.
Yep. Have you been following what's going on in Texas and redistricting? And of course, there's calls for Missouri for that as well. But have you been following that story?
A little bit, because people are trying to run over to Illinois. It's like a whole fiasco with Democrats trying to say that the Republicans are trying to basically just do everything to make sure we can get the votes we need. And
look at Illinois' districts, and you tell me that's not gerrymandered. And that's the state, which, by the way, you have Governor Pritzker over there talking to Democrats in Texas right now. If you want to flee your state, come to Illinois, because you're not going to have any of that gerrymandering nonsense going on. Well, let's look at the way the districts are carved out in Illinois, and you'll look at that and say, how in the world is that not gerrymandering, honestly? But if we go back and look at the way some of these districts and maps were put together, what's the difference between what Republicans want to do in evening the districts versus Democrats who did it based on, well, we got to break it down by racial, by the color of your skin. We have to racially segregate districts in order to represent it in a certain way. What's the difference between Republicans and Democrats on that standpoint? Yeah. I don't know if there is one.
Well, think about all these illegals who they want to pour in across our borders because, and you brought this up earlier, Ryan, but then they're able to count them in the census, and then that gives them more congressional seats, and then they can go in with their gerrymandering and they can make sure that they carve out the areas that are going to give them more representation in Congress.
Yeah. With all the
nothing to see here, though, folks.
What you're finding is a lot of these different seats are going to be very difficult to keep when you look at the new makeup after deportation and then the amount of votes that went to Democratic candidates in those districts. I think they said there could be even a swing of 25 towards the Republicans. And I mean, that's a huge swing. And it goes to show you it wasn't all conspiracy theory when people said one of the big reasons Democrats are in favor of illegal immigrants into this country and want to ignore immigration laws because it did help them with congressional seats. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about it anymore when you show that type of swing.
Yeah. And, you know, when we were talking to Ryan Schmelz earlier from Fox News Radio, he was talking about how Nancy Mace has just announced that she's running for governor in South Carolina. And I was it like a plus six or something as far as her district right now? Mm-hmm. But that would be concerning potentially for who could take over that seat. I mean, clearly she comes from a conservative enough district where she was able to be elected. But what if there's a swing? And what if somehow a more liberal of Rhino, I mean, that term's kind of overused, but what if somehow someone like that gets elected to her seat? And then that really can shake things up in Congress.
I think there's going to be a lot of shakeups in this next election. It's going to be quite the interesting one. Did you see that President Trump was on Newsmax and was discussing Russiagate? We played some of it as part of the shortlist, but I wanted to play the full comment, or at least a big portion of that interview, and what could be happening next coming up. I think that's going to be kind of important to break down, because there's a lot of implications there. Also joining us soon is Tom Ackerman on our sister station, KMOX. We'll be in studio to talk sports. And did you see the story about Ty Burrell? He was on Modern Family, one of the main actors. He was the dad there, and he left Hollywood. I love the stories of actors that leave Hollywood. I absolutely love to see that liberation. So I wanted to talk about that and a couple of other things that I want to get to this hour. It's the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. Kim, do you watch Newsmax?
Nah, I'll see clips. I don't just sit there and watch it, though.
Yeah, I don't watch it as well. I understand they're doing phenomenal in the ratings. They're doing great for kind of a startup, in the sense they're not really a startup anymore. They've been around for a while, but still, ratings-wise, they do really well. And I have not checked out Rob Finnerty's show before, but over the weekend, he had a sit-down interview with President Donald Trump. He asked specifically about Russiagate, and he wanted to get some answers about what's going to happen next. I thought this was really fascinating. Can we play clip number 9?
New emails, Mr. President, suggest essentially that Hillary Clinton personally approved the Russia hoax.
With Obama?
With Barack Obama. And my question is she finally going to pay for what she did, or does she get a pass again?
So, you know, we had her, and I had her right under the sights, and I told the people, look, you can't do this to a president's wife, an ex-president,
Secretary
and she was
State.
Secretary of State, right. But you can't do this to the wife of a president. And
do
if you
still
remember,
feel that way?
If you, well, I'll tell you how I feel about it in a sec. If you remember, I was at a rally, and it was after the election, and they said, lock her up, and I said, no, 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 look, we won, just relax, and I didn't do what other people would have done, what they would have done. And then they went after me, and they meant it. I said, you know, it's amazing. I felt, always felt, that you shouldn't be doing this stuff, and I let Hillary off the hook. I totally left her off the hook. And then I let her off the hook for, you know, for what? And then I come in, and they did the same thing to me. The difference is they actually meant it, and they drove, they hurt a lot of people, and it was all a hoax. And now they have it in black and white. No, I think they should pay a price.
How directly?
By the way, it's a very big price. It could be the biggest scandal in the history of our country, but it continues onward. And that continues onward. You know, that scandal has continued from the beginning.
That is from Newsmax over the weekend. So here's my hesitancy. I think you're going to have, it's going to be hard. You can't really do much to Barack Obama with the different protections that he will have. What about the people that were also implicated in this? Well, say Hillary Clinton and some other high-ranking officials. That could be a whole different story. I would like to know if any of them perhaps lied under oath. Now that we get in black and white what was written behind the scenes, could it be possible to find any testimony that contradicts the truth, knowing what we know now? I really miss WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks would have just released everything by now if they were active. Why can't we get that going again and just get all this information out there, honestly? And we can see it for ourselves.
So when you're talking about Obama likely not facing any sort of consequences for any role he may have played in this, are you saying that specifically as it relates to the Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity?
I think that's part of it, yeah. I think that is what he's going to rely on when it comes to his official duties. I think what you're going to do is you're going to be arguing official duties, kind of like Donald Trump argued official duties, and ultimately it's going to go nowhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that your time and money is going to be much more well spent at the people that were around this scandal that were not named Obama.
Yeah, because you know, when we've talked to legal experts, they've mentioned something about the fact that Obama might not be as protected as we think under that whole notion of presidential immunity. But I mean, you're right. If he can somehow say, well, there was a threat of this and this is the step we took in order to mitigate that, then I don't know why it wouldn't be covered under that.
It wouldn't stop. Let's say we saw this with Democrats to Trump. It wouldn't stop Democrats from using this if it was in reverse, because they have used it on him in reverse. So I think what you got to do is you got to build up, kind of like a drug dealer. You start low and you got to get them up the chain, up the chain, up the chain until you get to the big kingpin. Obama's the kingpin, but you can take down a lot of the other drug dealers on the street during this time and get some of this illegal narcotics off the streets and people getting hurt if you start working up the chain. I think that's kind of how you would have to approach this. And I know that Hillary Clinton's going to be a big person to get up, but she's not going to have the same protections that an Obama would have, or at least the same arguments of protection Obama would have.
Yeah, I mean, she can't argue presidential immunity. I mean, you think about how this ties into the whole auto pen thing. And the problem is they're trying to go after his staffers. What did they know? When did they know? What kind of thing? And so many of them are just pleading the fifth. You know, you have like a Hunter or an Anthony Fauci, not that those people tie into this, but you have people like that who can't plead the fifth because they were pardoned. But there's a lot of people who are just going to sit up there and say, oh, nope, I plead the fifth. And there's really nothing they can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's probably what will happen with this, too.
Here's something else that could be a strategy. And this is kind of a dirty strategy, but politics, it's a dirty business. We know that the Democratic Party wasted $1 billion on Kamala Harris. They went into debt for this. we know that donors don't want to give money to these woke progressives, and these are the ones that the party is somewhat pushing. Hypothetically speaking, since the party was behind this, knowing they were using this as a way to punish a political opponent, the Democratic Party, could you just tie them up in lawsuits and drain their bank account? As soon as a little money goes in, twice is going to go out based on the threat of these suits, discoveries, the courts. And this would just so handcuff them in the next election, because they are just out of money, that this would be the way to punish them. Is that possible?
Well, I feel like they're doing that to Donald Trump right now. Every single action that he takes, they just, some liberal, you know, Obama appointed judge just sits there and slaps some sort of injunction and says, oh, you can't implement that. And then it just wastes all this time in court, which is exactly what they want, because they know ultimately he's going to win. They're just delaying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that would be an approach that you could theoretically take. Yeah. I mean, it's like if you know, if you're going to play this game, we can play it too.
Oh, please. That's what the Democrats would say. Oh, please.
You got to get the nasal, the nasal sound when you do that.
Yeah. Well, I think working in their favor, at least this time around, is using and shopping around these district courts in order to get a nationwide injunction. I find that you're going to get more judges on the bench that would be, I guess, more friendly to handle cases or look at cases like this without the ability for, I guess, the Democratic Party to shop as much as they used to. Let's put it that way. Maybe that could be something there, maybe not. I think that it's warranted at least to get the information out there to show that he was right. And part of what you find with Russiagate and some of these other different stories that are out there, I find that more often than not, Donald Trump is vindicating that he was telling the truth, and he was showing that he was correct and he was justified to be upset with this. And he was unjustly targeted by not only the legal system, but the Democrats in this point in high ranking officials are still targeting him. So when I hear things like the Epstein list and him saying, no, I'm not on this, this has got to stop, there's nothing there, I look at his track record of being right on topics like that. And I start to say, well, maybe this really is nothing. But at the same time, it just doesn't feel right to say it's nothing. You know, I find his judgment on war and how to end war is right on. I find his judgment when it comes to immigration is on. There's so many things that he's just right on the money with, that if he says this is a big deal and perhaps maybe the biggest scandal, then it may potentially be the biggest scandal in American political history, at least modern history.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about Watergate. We're done saying that. Russia Gate's where it's at.
Yeah, Russia Gate.
All right, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. You're not going to want to go anywhere, because we're talking sports with Tom Ackerman, sports director on our sister station, KMOX, coming up. And if you want to find me online, at Ryan Recker, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook, 97.1 FM Talk.
A great sports mind like Tom Ackerman.
Baseball's really not a hard sport.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
It's like powered by coffee this morning.
Sports, sponsored by McDonald's, reminding you to round up your total for Ronald McDonald House Charities on your next order.
Hey, Tom Ackerman, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Ryan Recker. Boy, we go back a long ways, buddy. How are you?
It goes back. I'm doing good. You know, I hope you're doing well as well. It's an interesting time in sports. You get NFL starting up soon. Unfortunately for the Cardinals, not a lot of fans are optimistic or happy with the way things have played out this year. And I saw one headline in Yahoo Sports say, Cardinals writer believes Nolan Arenado has played final game in St. Louis. Do you think it's not moving at the trade deadline, but now going on in the IL means it's over for him for the year at least?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. He's been dealing with a number of ailments. So, you know, it could well be. I don't know if it's his final game as a Cardinal. He's still under contract. So, you know, he has to be traded or go somewhere else. And the last time they tried to trade him, he rejected the trade. And I'm not sure how much value he has out on the trade market. I mean, guy makes a lot of money. His offensive skills have diminished. He's a great defensive player. I love him. Watching him play third, but you know, who's going to actually make the deal for him unless the Cardinals eat some of that salary, which I don't think they're willing to do. But they'd like to they've wanted to move him before to give themselves some salary relief. So it's possible. Anything's possible. I think the best case scenario, if you're a Cardinals fan, is that you have third base available for some other players, some younger players, to give that thing a run here in 2026. That's what they wanted to do in 25. And it's not to say that Arenado doesn't belong here. He's just, you know, blocking some younger players from taking that position. I think in the meantime, you just appreciate that you have Nolan Arenado. He's going into the Hall of Fame. He's going to go into Cooperstown. You get a chance to see a player like that. It is a shame that when they made those two huge trades, Paul Goldschmidt and then Nolan Arenado, you couldn't do anything with it. You know, in 22, they won the division. It was a great year. Goldschmidt won the MVP. Arenado finished high for the MVP. I think they finished third in the voting. It was a great year for those two. And then there was nothing in the playoffs. They couldn't come through in the series against the Phillies. And then everything just sort of deteriorated from there. So that's a tough deal because you had such promise with those two great players. I mean, at the time, the Cardinals had two of the best players in baseball in their infield at first and third.
Yeah. One thing that the Cardinals do a fantastic job at, and there's always going to be a lot of people that are never satisfied when it comes to trade deadline. And, you know, there's a lot of questions, what could have been. But one thing I think the Cardinals may have a great track record, man, do they pick some guys that people love. Like, these are well-loved athletes that really the city can get behind. They seem like good dudes. They seem to pick those type of people.
Well, you'd like to think so. I mean, really, what it comes down to now with fans is they just want to win. I mean, they want to have good players to root for, obviously. You don't want to pick a bunch of bad people out there. But you want these players to flourish. I mean, Jordan Walker, there isn't a better guy than that. I mean, he's a nice guy. He's got a great family. He's, you know, a hard worker. He's a terrific athlete. They might have moved him up a little too soon and tried to teach him to play right field on the fly. And, you know, maybe he just doesn't have that timing down at the plate that he could have used more minor leagues at the time. You know, the fans want him to produce at this point. The Cardinals have to just go back to developing players the right way. And that this is the problem that they have, is that they develop players too quickly, or they draft talent and they identify talent. These are really good players and they let them get away. And other teams end up getting them, and they go on to have great careers elsewhere. The Cardinals have to go back to drafting, developing, retaining, meaning they draft them, they develop them, they bring them through the minor leagues, and then they end up signing them to extensions and keep them once they become great. That's how you develop a powerhouse. You develop your own talent, like Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols and Adam Wainwright, who they traded for. They didn't draft Waino, but they got him when he was a minor leaguer from the Braves. This is how the Cardinals have become great. They have to go back to that. And that has been an issue for them, major issue for them, over, I'd say, a decade of just they haven't identified, and they have now, what the problem is. They didn't put the resources into the minor leagues like they should have. They thought it would never break, and it did, and everybody else passed them. So now it's time to get back to what they used to be. A franchise, an organization that everybody wants to model their own system after. And the Cardinals have to seek what that is. That team right now is the Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers are a mid-sized market with not a high payroll, but somehow they have the best record in baseball. How is that? How do they have a better record than these teams with enormous payrolls? Because they have a system in place. They believe in it. They draft, develop their players. And then you know what they do when those players get really good? They ride them out for a couple years, and then when they decide, I'm not sure the next 5 years are going to be great enough, so they trade those players. And it rubs people the wrong way at first, teammates, fans, and everything else, but they sure bring out a great product every year. I mean, they trade away some really good players, but somehow they always replenish. That's where the Cardinals need to get.
I mean, we have such a rebuilding year, it seems like, next season. And I know you were talking about how Liam Doyle might be ready to even play as soon as next year. I guess if they can develop him in this offseason that's coming up here.
I like him.
I mean, is that the secret, is just getting guys like that and trying to develop them and get them out there to play?
That's
different
because Doyle was the fifth pick in the draft. The Cardinals won't have that high of a pick every year. That's a rare thing where you have J.J. Weatherholt, 7, Liam Doyle, 5. Doyle was the number one starter for Tennessee, so he will be – I still see him down the road in his life as a closer. I don't know why. I see that in him. He has closer type mentality and stuff, but he has a lot of different pitches. So it's natural to want to use him as a starter because that was his success in college. But he's ready to go take the next step, I think, pretty quickly. Weatherholt the same. He's ascended very quickly through the minor leagues because he was a really good college player. He's more experienced than a Jordan Walker who you just took out of high school and had to develop through the minor leagues. These top really good college players that you can take when they're in their 20s and teach them in the minor leagues, it's a shorter window, I think, for them. So, yes, I agree with you, but they won't have that high of a pick, I don't think, the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. They're going to go back to eventually a mid-first-round pick. But, yeah, I mean, those players are awesome. What you want to find is the diamonds in the rough. Yadier Molina, fourth round. Albert Pujols, 13th round. You know, some of these guys that you can grab in the mid-rounds and develop them into superstars.
It's amazing. Real quick, because of somewhat of a controversial move last weekend, St. Louis City Soccer Club removed a fan who was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. It's got national attention now, and the soccer club has not put out, as far as we know, an official statement. How do you think they should handle this controversy? Because it's getting a lot of people upset and making their club not look in the greatest light.
They're going to have to put out a statement and align with Major League Soccer on it and decide what that exactly is. I don't know what that policy is. I've heard a lot of different reports and speculation on all of that. That's understandable that something would get that much attention because the video certainly grabs your attention. But I got to be honest with you. I'm so tired of politics intersecting with my sports world. I mean, I am a person who likes sports because it unifies everybody. You know, everybody should be able to go see a game and we shouldn't have to talk about all of this. And that happened yesterday or whenever it was last Saturday. Like I'm up here looking at the screen at Sydney Sweeney's ads and everybody's talking about that for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, are we just going to continue this cycle of separating everybody and putting everybody on their side and continuing to fuel the fire on both sides? I'm talking to both sides here. Just can we just enjoy our sports and our entertainment without politicizing everything that ever happens? But I did watch the video. I saw it happen. I'd like to know a little more information. I'm not saying the guy did anything wrong. I'd like to know, like, what led up to that? Why he says that they emailed the team.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? So I want to know, like, what an email went to the team and then who got the email. I need more.
You
I need
said
to
managers,
know.
Which surprised me because I'm like, what managers
so then
would have been.
Somebody was in the crowd and said, hey, this guy's wearing a MAGA hat. Get him out of here.
Mm-hmm.
What? I mean, a guy wearing a hat? Like, I need a little more information. But did something else happen that I don't know about? So, you know, it all seems kind of, and the video was, you know, very eye-opening and certainly worthy of national attention. I can see why that would get all kinds of attention. But again, I go back to this. It's just like over and over. I have to watch, especially in our sports world, about, you know, sometimes I just like everybody to just play the sport and go watch the sport and be able to go to games without having to deal with all of that.
Real quick, because I know we're kind of out of time, but Lonnie Anderson passing away. Did you watch WKRP in Cincinnati like everyone else did?
Yeah, I was pretty young at that time. I was born in 75, but I do remember it well. And certainly, a huge star that has passed away. We've lost some tremendous stars in the entertainment business.
Well, you're the sports director, so you know a thing or two about sports talent. Apparently on WKRP in Cincinnati, Les Nessman also handled the sports on that radio station. And another very popular TV radio station was Frasier. It was KACL, and who did sports there was Bob the Bulldog Briscoe. Who would you rather have doing sports on KMOX, Bob the Bulldog or Les Nessman?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, both great. I'd probably put them in some sort of contest to see who has the best and let the listeners decide. Because it's really, you know, when you have two great talents like that, it really comes down to the listeners. You know, let's just vote
one
of them out of there.
Got to take it one broadcast at a time.
They're both great. I mean, who would you pick? I don't know if I'd pick one over the other.
I'm a classic Les Nessman, because keep in mind, he was the Silver Sow Award winner. What was the award that he... It was something like that. But how could you go against WKRP in Cincinnati in a situation
really.
Like that?
Yeah, you can't really. No. But it's a good contender that you brought up from Frazier.
Yeah. Well, the play-by-play of the turkey drop, I think, is his resume
for sports. That's what puts it over the edge. I mean, it's just such a classic clip that continues to, every time I open up Twitter, it's somewhere in my scroll, like somewhere in there.
Well, now that we're talking about it, it'll be over everyone's feed, because this is what happens.
Listen
to us, and then that's what it feeds you.
Exactly. And then somebody will politicize it. Somebody on the left or the right will be like, oh, that's so whatever, you know.
Oh, Tom Ackerman, thank you so much for joining us.
We really
appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
And our sports director over on our sister station, KMOX. We have one more segment coming up. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Cox, 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. We only got a couple of minutes here. First, Kim, I love that one of the stars of Modern Family, Ty Burrell, admitted that he has no regrets ditching Hollywood to move his family out to Utah, where they can live a more open life outdoors. He gets to take his fortune he made from that show, and probably still year by year, I'm guessing, makes some pretty good money with syndication and DVD and all these other sales. But good for him. I love stories of celebrities that get out of that Hollywood cesspool.
There's a lot of them. And, you know, you never really hear anyone regretting it. They're always talking about how much happier they are now that they're not entangled in all that, you know, Hollywood drama and just chase. It seems so stressful and superficial to me being in that world.
It's probably making more money than ever, considering the less taxes he's paying and the cost of living in California. Now, when you're a star of that level, you've made some money, you can afford to live a pretty nice and decent life. But think about how much more your money stretches when you're in a place like Utah, living on a ranch. And he's got teenage daughters. It's got to be hard for them, but it sounds like they're on board, which is fantastic. So I'm really happy about that. The other thing is, Tom Ackerman brought this up, the Sydney Sweeney ad. Did you see Donald Trump has weighed in on that?
Yeah, well, because, you know, she came out as a registered Republican. So now people are freaking out that she's a registered Republican. And I mean, to Tom's point, who cares? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I'd care that she's a Democrat. I'd be like, oh, well, okay, whatever. I don't know. I don't agree with you politically, but whatever. I'm not going to be mad at her about it.
Yeah, it's one. Weird things when it comes to young men and extremely attractive women that do weird sexual things on television and movies. And like one of the things she did not that long ago, she partnered with, was it Bigfoot Soap or
something like
and
that.
And she sold bathwater.
She's like, her bathwater in soap form.
That degenerates are like, I gotta get that. And I'm like, that is such a weird thing. And now she does these ads. The ads are not controversial whatsoever, but some people try to make it controversial. Why is the president even commenting on something like this, honestly? Like, why is it something that he thinks he's in a win situation to take a side of a blue jean commercial? And she's wearing like the full blown jeans, bottoms and tops. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was called the Canadian tuxedo. I didn't know that was an American thing.
Too. You're right.
Is that back in fashion?
I guess. I think I've seen more and more people wearing it. I'm not fashionable enough for that. Yeah. I mean, I don't like the ad because it's sexualized, but the beef for the liberals is that they think that it's racist for them to say she has good jeans and she happens to have blonde hair and blue eyes. But have I seen people posting about Beyonce and how she did some sort of, was it for American Eagle or something years ago? Or some other ad that she did and her hair looked blonde in it. And it's exhausting that they have to come up with this stuff every time. Like, it's Nazi propaganda. How?
Yeah, no, it's not. And they try to force it. And I'm sure they are enjoying the controversy because they can profit off of it. It's kind of what they hope for. Like the worst thing would be for them to come out with this and it would be just a big dud and no one was talking about it. And they spent all that money and time and effort to get the big star to do their line. But, you know, I guess it kind of surprised me how far this type of campaign has gone. But whoever put this campaign together, I'm sure, got a big fat bonus check and they're out there pitching their next idea to the next big buyer. The fact that you can get the president to comment on your advertising campaign is a pretty big deal. And that's like at the center of all this. wouldn't surprise me if maybe they started to drum up this controversy to begin with in order to get some more people to talk about it, or if this was a natural progression. Well, Kim, it was fun working with you today. I really appreciate it. Ethan, it was fun working with you today, too. You did a fantastic job. I think this is our first time I've been working since you've been behind the board. So
that is true.
Thank you for making it so easy on me.
Thank you, sir.
I'll be back again tomorrow, filling in for Mark Cox. If you want to find me on Twitter, at Ryan Recker, you're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.